This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Cup of coffee with you, so we've done that now. Secondly, I'm doing a movie and a book project being managed in Canada. I'm right across the border from Canada, so working with Chad on the graphic novel and being across the border from the movie project, this is the perfect place for me.
So I understand there's also a competing movie project Warner Brothers is doing, is that right? Based on the Wired magazine article by Joshua Davis?
Right. Actually, there are two other projects going on, one by Sacha Baron Cohen. I'm anxious to see that one. I love his work, and I'm sure I will end up looking foolish and idiotic, and I'm looking forward to it. The second one is based on Josh Davis's ebook, but Josh spent a total of 3 weeks with me, and knows such a tiny fragment of the story that I don't believe there's going to be much that can be made from the movie. I'm the only one who holds all the information, and so I'm not too concerned about competing with Josh's.
Obviously, you've had a lot of press lately, from the Times of London to local TV in Portland, and I guess you just can't get much better than girls, guns, and pharmaceutical labs, as far as if it bleeds, it leads. But what's the story you're interested in telling?
I'm interested in telling of a whole bunch of stories. I think the first and foremost is that people misunderstand the reality of Central American countries, especially places like Belize. It's a tourist destination, a spectacular dive spot. And people go there thinking it's a mini America. It is not. Much of the country is starving. There is abject poverty everywhere, and the corruption is unbelievable. Secondly, the risk that is posed by the Belizean government giving fake identities to Hezbollah, I think that has not been underscored. I consider this to be a major danger to America. I'm positive that the American authorities know something, probably as much or more than I do, and yet nothing is being done. And I just want to get the word out about that.
When you're grading on a curve, Belize, people tend to think of it as a safe place. It's not as corrupt as, say, the Mexican government or the Guatemalan government. But you've uncovered a lot just through your own intelligence, just by, in one instance, you said that you gave some laptops that collected information to government officials.
Yeah, that is correct. I mean, keep in mind that in April, the government sent 42 armed soldiers onto my property, and they shot my dog, destroyed much of my property, stole much of my property, and didn't even apologize. From that moment, I considered it war, and so in war, all things are fair. And yes, I did collect information from the government ministers and the police organizations, because they were after me for exposing the corruption. They don't want it exposed. 70% of the economy is based on tourism, so corruption and tourism do not go well.
Here he is, Chad. Joined by Chad Esley of CartoonMonkey.com. Welcome, Chad.
Good evening.
I understand that the two of you are headed up to Vancouver, BC to look for some financing for projects.
Potentially, yes. We're not sure that we're heading up this week. Maybe the gentleman will come down here. And it's not financing we're looking for. We already have a production company. We're simply trying to strategize how we're going to do this, when we're going to do this, whether we put the book out first, or documentary first, or the full movie. So we all have to sit down and make sure we're on the same page.
It sounds like you have a lot of production that you want to bring to Portland as far as live production, maybe animation, maybe video games.
Absolutely. There are a number of things that we're doing that could easily be done here in Portland.
So here we are with Chad Esley of Cartoon Monkey, animator who's worked for Sesame Street as well as a number of other projects. And you and John met up on the boards, on the tech boards.
Yep.
So tell us how you actually met up in person after being virtual friends for as many weeks or months as you were.
Well, essentially after trading a lot of messages back and forth and cartoons online, I've noticed in the news, because I put John into my Google News feed, I noticed that a raid had taken place and a bunch of his dogs had been shot. And I wrote back to him. There was a previous offer on the table to come down, but this is about a year later. And John said, you know, this is actually about a month after the raid. And I figured, you know, everything was clear. Obviously, they made a mistake, and everything in John's life was fine. And he said, time to come to Belize.
And this was after he had left the Orange Walk property along the river, and he was living on the island off of the coast of Belize. So you actually came out and stayed at the villa on Ambergris Cay?
That's correct, yep.
And in your comics, there's some mention of your meetings. You're going out to a cafe surrounded by armed guards while there were meetings going on.
Well, John has a certain number of security people in his daily life. And that was definitely a presence when I was there, yes. True.
Your wife wasn't too thrilled about your going down, was she?
She was a little concerned, more concerned once I arrived and had emailed a few tales of things happening there. So she was a little frightened. I had emailed her just a Google satellite picture saying, look how neat it is here one day, and with no other message, and she had taken that as almost a distress signal. So things were a little tense for a guy like me, but it was actually a lot of fun, and through it all, I mean, I look back, and it's something I wouldn't have missed for the world, so...
Now, did you feel safe the whole time you were surrounded by all this interesting culture?
No, I did not. I felt safe at times, but there were definitely sleepless nights and, fear for my life. I came home 10 days early as a result of fearing for my safety. So it was a little bit of a wild ride. And looking back on it, a great deal of fun. Great adventure. Fantastic adventure. Wise? Maybe not so wise in terms of the dangers surrounding him at the time in his life there, but certainly interesting and not something I would do again anytime soon. But, yep.
So the time when you were down there in Ambergris Cay at McAfee's villa, this was only weeks before all the craziness went down with his neighbor Gregory Fall being murdered and McAfee taking off for Guatemala. So it seemed like things might have been coming to a head already when you were around.
Yeah, there was definitely, John had a large security force and people telling him about various movements of people on the island who were sort of after him. And, I write about some of this in the graphic novel. So, things had come to a little bit of a head there, and I didn't really realize what I would be getting into going down there. I didn't think John realized that things would sort of escalate as they did. I left on the day a hurricane was blowing in, and one of the people that I went to a meeting with, who was basically a high-ranking gang member / Colombian drug lord, attended a peace talk. He was killed by the gang suppression unit the day I left Belize. And so I felt in many ways I was escaping a hurricane, of many, many different definitions.
And the gang suppression unit is the arm of the Belizean law enforcement that McAfee blames on a lot of the raids on his various properties.
Correct. His claim is that a gang suppression unit is sort of the right-hand men, if you will, the prime minister there, and they sort of do his dirty work for him. So, from my perspective, that might be true. Time will maybe tell the tale there. I'm trying to write an objective graphic novel about the entire thing and sort of collect data. I myself would not want to go to prison in Belize. There is no jury there.
And when John McAfee did go on the run from Belize into Guatemala, you became the guy who was running the website for him. You were running whoismcafee.com, so you were actually posting all of his messages that went from him to the blog.
That is not actually true. I basically set up the blog with a one-click install, literally, and put a graphic on the header and gave him the keys to the blog. John, on the run, with cell phone access, tethering his phone, however he was getting access to the internet, posted every post is from John, even from a Guatemalan jail.
Wow.
So,
all you need is a laptop or an iPhone in order to blog. And I didn't do vast volumes of blogging. I did it when I could. once a day, sometimes once every 2 days. It was very simple. I mean, technology is all I've done in my life, and so putting a blog together is not a difficult thing.
So, Chad, you've actually led a pretty quiet life, like a lot of comic artists, and all of a sudden, as soon as all of the McAfee wackiness started happening, everybody from the Times of London to National Public Radio was calling you up, and this was pretty unexpected for you.
A little unexpected, yes. Yes, yes, to say the least.
What was your first reaction when you sort of became a celebrity yourself for running whoismcafee.com?
Well, my first inclination was to try to offload that responsibility to someone else, honestly, and so that I could keep drawing the graphic novel, because it took up a tremendous amount of time on the phone speaking to news organizations and telling the same tale over and over again and dealing with all of the tech support for the website. And we luckily got a group of people to come in. We had to finally trust someone to help us, and they helped a little bit with the web design and the maintenance of the blog, and that was a huge weight off my shoulders. But the dealing with the media, I'm still not quite used to it, sir. It can be a little much at times, so I just thank God for smartphones and the ability to shut down phone numbers that are not in your contact list, because, you know, 10 years ago I would have been woken up at 6 a.m. every day, like I have been. So if someone does that to me, their number is banned and they do not get through again. So,
and I have noticed at the same time you came in for a number of wild accusations while you were helping run the website. People were saying that Chad Esley is just a pseudonym for John McAfee.
Oh, yes. I had claims. What happened was Josh Davis and Wired Magazine came out with their own, selling an ebook, and John sort of had it with the media at that point and made me the main point of contact for his public relations worldwide. And it was just an absolute tidal wave. You know, I think the first call was from Good Morning America. And it's pretty easy to fake something like that. I did put John directly in contact with Good Morning America, and they said, how can we know this is John McAfee? I said, well, certainly at your disposal you have voice print analysis software, and you can speak to him, record his voice, and compare it against other interviews he's done. It's simple. And, you know, I was even asked, is this some political prank by the Yes Men, by news organizations? And I had to really, you know, work to convince people at first that it was, in fact, the real deal. So that was pretty entertaining at the time.
So you originally hired Chad to work on some animation for Quorum X, the pharmaceutical lab that you had set up in Belize?
Right, I did. I met him on a private message board. I liked his work. Quorum X was active at the time, and so I did hire him to do some animation for us. He did a great job.
So I understand, and I may be wrong about this, that the two of you went on a powerboat trip up the river and passed the old Quorum X property along with the area that you lived in, the Orange Walk area. I guess you still own the property there, or did you give it up?
I do not own the property anymore, no. Okay. But yes, we did, or Chad did. I was not with him at the time. Chad did take a trip up to a Mayan ruin called Lamanai, and did pass by the property during that trip.
So the idea was you were working on extracting natural antibiotics from the indigenous plants of the area?
Right. That was the project, using a new science called quorum sensing, which is a science of bacterial communication. You know, we have discovered that bacteria do not become pathogenic until a specific number have collected within a host. That's very important for deadly diseases. So that was a technology we were working on, trying to disrupt the communication between bacteria. We were doing a great job. The chief researcher in charge of the project, however, did leave, and I had a difficult time replacing her, and so I shut it down.
Also, one of the problems that you had in the area, I understand, is that the Orange Walk area of Belize, it's very close to the Mexican border. There is a lot of illegal drug traffic that happens in that area.
Right. It's not just in Orange Walk. I think throughout the mainland of Belize, drugs is, there are only two economies. One is tourism, the other is drugs. And so on the mainland, drugs is the main business. And I was completely taken by surprise, I think, at the sheer volume and widespread participation of the population. That was my misjudgment.
Now, there's some folks who are saying that you were involved in drugs yourself, because you did a hoax
on the Blue Light website that said that you had come up with 10 bath salts, MDPV.
It was actually a mythical drug that first popped up about 10 years ago. People were talking about it. No one believed it was real, and it turned out not to be real. However, I resurrected it and claimed to have found the formula for it. And I had a blast over a number of months, and it is still the record thread on Blue Light.
Your bet was that you could get 1,000 posts on Blue Light?
That is correct, and I did.
Is it appropriate to say, John, that you're a tech innovator and a venture capitalist? You've started a number of ventures before leaving for Belize.
Right. I wouldn't call myself a venture capital. Those are people who give other people money. I am, however, a serial entrepreneur in that I do start my own businesses and fund them. I cannot stay unbusy. I have to keep doing and creating things, else I get into trouble. I get into trouble anyway, so I can get in real trouble if I am idle. So I am not idle. Unfortunately, I'm going to leave you here with Chad because I have to run to a prior engagement. I've really enjoyed being on your show, and I hope to come back sometime when we all have more time.
Well, John McAfee, thanks for joining us, and we hope you will come back to KBOO and talk some more.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Words and Pictures on KBOO. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and I'm in an undisclosed location with John McAfee, the tech entrepreneur, and Chad Esley, the animator behind CartoonMonkey.com. They're working on the project The Hinterland, a graphic memoir of their adventures together. And full disclosure, Portland has a close-knit animation community, and Chad and I have worked together at a number of local studios. So, Chad, you were managing to draw during this entire time of being in this hyper-adrenalized world of John McAfee.
Well, in a way, it's just an extension of what I used to do normally as a kid, which is, you know, a lot of cartoonists tend to withdraw into their own little world and draw things. And so it just seemed natural to me to sit back with my sketchbook and sort of not totally ignore, but tune out a little bit and just draw my thoughts on paper as I was interacting with people and hanging out in these situations that were a little dubious.
It's interesting to me that you and John have become so friendly when, to me, you seem polar opposites. You're a happily married man with a mortgage and a small business, and he's a guy who, by his own admission, doesn't own anything. He is constantly on the run and sort of this adrenaline junkie at the age of 67. Along with room and board and travel expenses, when you came down to Belize, he offered you any one of several teenage women to keep you company.
Yes, this was offered. It was on offer. It was a serious offer, and it's just not one that I had taken him up on. I think that, you know, John and I are polar opposites in many ways, but, you know, as the saying goes, opposites attract. In the same way my life is stable and normal, and his is full of adventure and craziness, I probably desire a slight bit of adventure and craziness in my life, whereas he might desire a slight bit of stability. And thusly, he's here in Portland writing a graphic novel, which I couldn't be happier about. And we've always, you know, shared a sense of humor. John loves comics. Culture-wise, we have always clicked. So on a personal level, you know, he would be one of my friends were he not worth millions and millions of dollars, and he were living in Portland. I'm sure that he would have been one of my friends playing cards and hanging out at coffee shops and talking about comics. I mean, it's sort of like that.
During your stay in Belize, during your stay in Ambergris Cay, is it true that your wife got on the phone with John at some point and gave her opinion about your safety?
She did not get on the phone with him, but it was, I believe, I had a Skype conversation with her, and I had told her about some of the dangers going on, and she, you know, she's very protective of her husband, you know, and her best friend, me, and she did say something to the effect of, you know, I will come after him. If any harm comes to your head, you let him know that he will be in trouble. And he would have been. And he just took that as yet another threat. And he acknowledged it and said, okay, that's fine. So,
well, you certainly heard stories about people who have worked with him before who suddenly break off the relationships and they don't want anything to do with him again.
I've heard a few of these tales, but again, I haven't researched it too deeply. All I know is that in person, to me at least, he's very, very kind. He's never rude, and he has a tremendous sense of humor. He's a very nice person, so I'd like to talk to those people if they want to give me a call.
The story is that he used to do a lot of drugs, used to drink a lot, and now is a teetotaler.
That's true. When I was in Belize, I wasn't even allowed to have a glass of wine with dinner. That was just not allowed. He's very anti-drugs and anti-alcohol. In any sense, I think his only vice is coffee and now cigarettes. You know,
it must have been pretty heady for you when John said, "I want to come to Portland to have a cup of coffee with you, Chad."
It was sort of it was not unexpected. He actually was on Ustream live blogging from a Guatemalan jail cell where he first said, they asked him, "What are you going to do if you get to the States?" He said, "I'm going to sit down and have a cup of coffee with my friend Chad Esley," which was actually something we talked about in Belize during the time of all the craziness going on. We were at breakfast one morning, just, taken aback by everything that was going on, and he was very stressed out, and I said, "John, at some point we're going to sit down. I would like to in the future, years down the road maybe, sit down and have a cup of coffee and just talk about all of this, because, we will look back and laugh about it, it just happened a whole lot sooner than I thought it would."
So John's arrived here in Portland, and it's the polar opposite of Belize with its sun and Caribbean waters, and here we are in a very cold winter, and he seems to be doing just fine.
Yeah, he seems to be acclimating to it quite well. I think that he spent some time at Boeing, if I'm not incorrect there, so he's probably pretty familiar with the Northwest climate. I know that he spent a lot of time in Colorado, so the cold weather, not a problem. Bit of a shock coming from the tropics directly, but...
And he's talking about going to England and actually bringing his girlfriends along. Did you get a chance to meet Samantha and Amy?
I did, yes. I have actually recorded interviews with them as well.
I guess they're still in Guatemala right now, and he's been working really hard to get them out.
I'm not sure if they're in Guatemala, number one. They're somewhere in hiding. I think he is working on immigration to try and bring them to the U.S., but I'm not sure on the status of that.
Is Samantha one of the people that you portray in the hinterland in the graphic novel?
Yes. Okay. And as is Amy, yeah. Okay. A few of the girls, not all of them, but I will be telling the tales of a few of these girls, yeah.
From the pages that you've got posted up on the web, it seems that the early part of the graphic memoir, the comic, is from the point of view of one of the women that John has.
Yeah, on the message board where I met Mr. McAfee, he actually had let Amy write on that message board, sort of an introduction. "Hello, my name is Amy. This is my story." She told the full story of her altercation with Mr. McAfee, which you can read about in the graphic novel, but it's all true. In the end, she wrote, "I hope to make friends. Please call me," and posted her phone number as well. So I tell that full tale as an introduction, and then I sort of step into the rest of the graphic novel.
By the way, I don't suppose you really had a chance to meet any of the neighbors that were on Ambergris Cay, but I'm sure you couldn't escape the fact that there was a lot of traffic and a lot of noise around his villa, which was apparently what a lot of the neighbors complained about.
There actually wasn't that much noise around. That's actually, he did have six or seven dogs, which make a lot of, they do bark, but against the noise of the ocean and the wind, I cannot see how that kept people up at night. The young girls did play Call Me Maybe at top volume, which is a little hard for me to take many hours of the day. But the neighbors were not actually that close. And with the noise, the general ambiance of the island, I can't believe anyone could hear anything going on where he was. So, and there's one dirt road that went 10 miles in from town, and no cars were on that road. There were only golf carts. So there wasn't really anything in terms of traffic. There's just not a lot of noise to make.
Okay, because I heard the stories that there were taxis with girls coming and going all day and all night because his lust is so insatiable.
I think that's false. Oh, a taxi would come up that road maybe once every 4 days. And it was kind of frowned upon that any car would come up that road just because on that end of the island, there's a lot of the more wealthy people living on the island wanted privacy. So that road was not paved on purpose. I guess people knew who it was sending a, definitely there were people who frowned upon his lifestyle. I've tried not to be judgmental in that regard. So, as to whether he was really bothersome and this was just an insatiable thing, I think that's a little far-fetched, and it's a little that's kind of the telephone game in effect.
Well, John mentioned his prankster spirit. Yep. Like messing with the press about ideas such as observational yoga studios where people come and watch yoga and get all the benefits of it. I mean, did you see any of the prankster activities that he was famous for?
I didn't actually. I mean, when I was in Belize, that article about the observational yoga came out, and I brought my phone. I came up on my phone and my Google News feed, and he brought it up on his iPad, and I saw him just laughing like crazy, and he proceeded to tell me the whole story. And he's a jokester anyway. When he's just in day-to-day life, he'll jump out and give you a little a scare or something, and I do see that in his nature.
So is The Hinterland going to be self-published? Is there going to be a publisher that's interested in taking it on?
You know, we have gotten a few bites here and there, one from Dark Horse, and we've had a literary agent talk to us about it, but I'm not sure if it will see print as an... I definitely want to see it in print as a book. Those deals are still being made, so I'm not certain. It could be an ebook with extended multimedia content and a little bit of video. It could be only print. I'm really not certain.
John mentioned that there's a number of movie projects in the works right now, so you're also thinking about an animated documentary, is that right?
That's true. Based on the graphic novel, probably, although the stories will be a little bit more fleshed out, but there's a movie called The Kid Stays in the Picture. There's also a documentary about Bill Hicks that's been released recently, and they take photographs and cutouts and narration and tell a story. And we're going to try to take a similar approach with the animated documentary, which is images from the graphic novel, some motion and animation, but a beautiful, maybe possibly all black and white, very light color treatment of, you know, moving artwork done in my style, and which I would direct. And we're seeking funding for that at the moment.
I have noticed there's been some freaking out in the local press about McAfee coming to live in Portland, and I guess he is planning to stay here for, 18 months or longer.
Yeah, there have been a few blog comments I've read that say, oh, we don't want his kind here, but for as many of those I've read, I've met, you know, 25 times more people who say welcome, because it is that kind of town, and we are welcoming to most everyone, so... I don't know what the vibe is on that, but I think that anyone like John, who is an interesting person, can be nothing but a good addition to the town. So,
Chad Esley and John McAfee, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Conch. It's good to be on your show.
You've been listening to Words and Pictures on KBOO. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and our guests today have been John McAfee, the tech entrepreneur and newsmaker, and Chad Esley, the animator behind CartoonMonkey.com. They've been working on the project The Hinterland, a graphic memoir of their adventures together. Thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and at KBOO.fm. The audio from the show will be archived later at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your Portland radio station.
And the time is about a minute before 12 noon here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM in Portland. Stay tuned for the Worldbeat Connection after these news headlines.
And now, the KBOO Noon Headlines. A rally will be held at 3:30 this afternoon on Southeast Grand and Hawthorne in support of the Austin family, who were evicted from their house last week. The rally is stationed in front of the Multnomah County building in order to let the county sheriff know that tax dollars should not be spent on evicting families from their homes. The Environmental Protection Agency has denied a report on cleanup strategies pieced together by business owners surrounding the Superfund site of Swan Island. The EPA said the proposals were deficient and needed substantial revision. The area was declared a Superfund site in 2000 on account of the dangerously high levels of PCBs and other pollutants found in the water there. The National Security Agency is in the process of building the nation's largest data collection center, which will be used to store information from computer and cell phone records of the American public, as well as for code cracking. The estimated $2 billion facility is located outside Bluffdale, Utah, and will be 5 times the size of the U.S. Capitol. The data collection center is set to be completed by September of this year. As top officials of banks and multinational corporations meet in Davos, Switzerland this week at the World Economic Forum, Greenpeace is hosting its own award ceremony in the town honoring the world's greediest and most destructive companies. And the winners are Shell, for its high-risk escapades of drilling in the Arctic, and Goldman Sachs, which they say plays a key role in financially driven globalization. Sparked by a minor car crash, protesters took to the streets yesterday outside of Baku, Azerbaijan, calling for the resignation of the regional governor. The larger issue at hand is the vast disparity of wealth in this small former Soviet republic. A small percentage of the populace purportedly flaunts its newfound oil wealth, while the majority lives by much humbler means. Yesterday, as the angry crowd torched cars and set up roadblocks, police fired tear gas and water cannons to disperse the protesters, who vowed to return the next day. Allegations of fraud immediately sprung up yesterday after Jordan's elections strengthened the government's grip over the country. The Muslim Brotherhood had called for a boycott of the elections, which they saw as biased toward the ruling U.S.-backed monarchy. The Islamic Action Front called for more protests to win reforms that have stagnated under the rule of King Abdullah. Tune in every weekday evening at 5 for your locally produced evening newscast. This is Keegan Heron with KBOO News.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Hopworks Urban Brewery, committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible at our carbon-neutral eco-pubs. Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver. Available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia, information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com.